Welcome to episode 170 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast for 2009. Today we're going to look back at my personally selected top 10 images of 2008. I'll talk a little about why I like each of them as well, and so you get an idea of the thinking behind the selection. Let's just jump right into it and take a look at the top 10. So, as usual, it was pretty tough to identify 10 images from the year that I really like. Not that there's, I'll get into this a little bit more. I don't mean that, as in there were no images in the year that I like. I mean that there were so many that I found it difficult to narrow them down. My first cut, literally just going through Lightroom, just hitting the B button to, on the keyboard to add my favorites to a quick selection, gave me a batch of just over 50 images right off the bat. Another run through that batch reduced it to 25 relatively quickly, but then it started to get really tough. I found this encouraging, of course, because 50, what I consider personally 50 significant images in one year is a pretty good crop. That's a rate of almost one a week, of course. And so I'm relatively happy with myself here. Anyway, further very difficult decisions, excluding a lot of images that I really wanted to leave in there, and including a lot of advice from my art director, Reed Wife, there, resulted in a list of 11 images. The one that I cut from this 11 was image number 1974, which I'm not going to include here. But this is the one of the Chinese soldier with that wonderful smirky smile that I raised and we spoke about a few weeks ago. I shot that portrait while I was in China in November, and I just love that photo. I really wanted to include it, but it turned out, that I'd got a selection. The other 10 were all nature related. And so I decided to remove the portrait and leave only nature photos in that final selection. A move that I'm already being questioned on from people that follow me on Twitter and saw a link in my top, a link to my top 10s when I'd sort of finally made the last decision a few days ago. I posted that that link on Twitter, and I got an instant message asking why I'd left that out. And it's to be expected, because anyone that's been following my work knows that that was one of my favorites for the year, and hopefully see it as one as being one of the more significant images that I've produced in 2008. So that was encouraging as well. Either way, the decision's made now, and I do really like my final cut of entirely nature photos. Note too that I'm going to go through these images chronologically, and not in the order of how much I like the images. The final cut was difficult enough without confusing matters more by trying to sort of order them in any sort of priority. So the first image is number 1668. This was shot on a trip to the Tatsusawa Falls near Inawashiro in January the 4th of 2008. So I'd gotten off to a good start at the beginning of the year. You may recall that I mentioned these falls as we looked at the image in episode 120. I'd included a recording of myself trudging through the thick snow to get to these falls, as the roads were too thick with snow, even for my four-wheel drive SUV to get through. I had turned on the highlight tone priority, a new tool that was I was getting used to with the 1DS, which I'd only had for just over a month. And I was convinced that the depth of the rock under the water there in this shot was down to the 1DS having shifted priority from the dark areas of, of the image to the light end of the spectrum to basically, protect those highlights. But as I shot through the year, I've seen this, I've not really seen that kind of compressed blacks very often again. And so I'm kind of thinking that that wasn't what was happening now. What I did as well, I used the Singray variable ND, the neutral density filter that you can turn to sort of dial in as much or as little darkness as you like. And so I think that, that probably played a big part in this. But there was no other post-processing. This is pretty much how it came out of the camera. And so, I'm pretty happy with it. Felt good with the look that I got. The variable ND, looking at the shutter speed, I must have been using it. But I had a shutter speed of 8 seconds for this. So, I'd obviously done a little bit of something there. I should have checked my notes in preparation. But I'm pretty certain that's what I did. The Singray variable ND being used there. And, what the 8 second shutter speed did was gave us that incredibly silky, smooth look in the water flowing over the rocks and probably, as I say, helped to deepen those blacks as well. It turns out that I wasn't all that impressed with the rest of the shots from the fall. They didn't sort of stick in my memory, and I have this habit of just sticking on a slideshow from Lightroom of all of the significant or the images that I take further in my workflow. At least I just do a random sort of slideshow when I'm not using the computer, and when the other images of the falls occasionally pop up on the screen, I was not that impressed. So they've fallen out of favor pretty badly. But this one, the more I looked at it through the year, the more it grew on me. And so it definitely ended up in this top 10. I'd say that if I had to prioritize the images a little bit, I would probably make this at least in the top three. So yeah, you can probably see that I've ended up really liking this image. Next up is a shot again from January, which I actually shot during the Hokkaido workshop. And this is image number 1704. This shot has come up a number of times in the podcasts throughout the year, and has been my best-selling print this year. It looks absolutely gorgeous on the Hanamule Museum etching fine paper. And, the texture of the paper adds texture to the snow. And so, it just makes for such a stunning artifact, even if I dare say it myself. This was shot at f11 for 1/250th of a second at ISO 200. And I was very conscious to maintain the brightness of the scene. The whole place was covered in frost with the mist rising from the river. And it was like a dream. And, the whole scene was just captivating. I'll never forget this, and the reason for me releasing the shutter at this point in time was the crane sort of dancing with a partner, and the partner can be seen sort of rearing up, ready to jump too, but they didn't jump together, and so I ended up with this solo dance in the distance there in the final image. We actually move forward in time now by around 5 months to image number 1816. Another waterfall shot. This is Ōtaki, or literally translated as Big Falls. It's in a small town called Tateshina in the Nagano Prefecture. I posted a number of shots from these falls and the trees on the walk up to the falls. But this remains my favourite of the shoot, and obviously one of my favourites of the year, because of the way the water sort of flows into and then out of the shot with a definite path to flow through. Although the small stream of water in the bottom right is not the main route of the water, we can see the main route of the water to the left there. That's the main body of water flowing out of the shot. But at least for me, it kind of, that water flowing out of the left kind of goes unnoticed with the way I've composed the shot. I love the texture of the water as well, rendered at 1/5 of a second, you know, not as fast as it needs to be to freeze the water, but not really slow enough to turn it to a totally silky flowing water as well. Which, you know, that's a look that I do like as well. But I, for this one, you know, it just worked out that, you know, a relatively shutter speed, can't talk today. It sort of rendered the water with such a nice texture that I, you know, it really, for me at least, added so much to these shots. And, you know, in a large print as well, they just look great. And so, you know, they've been really, really, you know, favorites throughout the second half of the year. I love the green, vibrant leaves in the, you know, in the top of the shot here as well. Very spring-like. Spring comes late to this part of Japan. And so, you know, it really sort of brings all that back as well. It's kind of a complete image, you know, composition-wise and content-wise, in my opinion. Another big jump in time now, almost 3 months to the end of September for image number 1914. Kind of as a side story, I've actually hacked the hell out of my iPhone. I've got this, obviously don't need to hack it to do this, but I've got a red silicone cover on it. And all of the hacking part has actually allowed me to change all of the buttons to make them like transparent orbs. And this is so that I can see the permanent wallpaper that that I have. And that is basically this shot. So my phone's like a wacky red iPhone. And it, you know, it's basically the reason that I used it is just because I love this shot. You know, the reds really pop. And I've used, you know, my usual sort of wide open aperture to minimize the depth of field to isolate the single red equinox flower that I've positioned against the trunk of the tree to make that pop too. This was shot with the 300mm f2.8 lens, and I've mentioned before that, you know, one of the main reasons why I picked up the 300mm f2.8 was to shoot shots like this. I love to single out small areas of flower beds in this way with, you know, wide open apertures. But, you know, the areas that need to be sharp have to be tack sharp, or, you know, I often end up just throwing the images out. So, you know, the great investment there. It's really, you know, been used a lot over the last year. And this is one of the best examples of you know, the style that I'm developing here. Before we move on, note too that I positioned the equinox flower on the, you know, against the tree, you know, in front of the tree trunk there on the left third, and then the second tree trunk in the bokeh in the background there over on the right third. And, you know, the equinox flower itself is actually at the top left third intersection. And, you know, I'm raising this just because the, you know, the rule of thirds is still a very powerful compositional tool, and not to be underestimated in any way. I don't stick to it all the time, but I do use it a lot. After all, you know, centuries of artists, even from well before photography was invented, can't be wrong. In image number 1935, we have a second example of using the 300mm f2.8 to isolate a small part of a large scene with very shallow depth of field. Whereas the first shot was taken with the aperture totally wide open, for this I actually stopped down two clicks to f3.5 as I wanted to get the dragonfly entirely in focus. I also find that f3.2 and 3.5 still usually give me the look that I'm after, and so I tend to use these apertures a little bit too. Especially, you know, as the 300mm... You know, it's definitely not, you don't need to click down a few thirds of a stop to sharpen up the image at all. You know, it's sharp as anything that I've used, even wide open at f2.8. But, you know, you do sometimes just need to get a little bit more of depth of field. So that's what I did here. I was at 3.5. And this was shot at the end of the same day as the last shot too, incidentally. What I like about this is that you know, I have the added element of the dragonfly in there, kind of peering out over his domain at the end of a busy day. And the sun had gone down below the mountains at the edge of this area at this point, but it was still high enough in the sky to be sort of creating a bright light source, which helped really to sort of create this atmospheric image. As I usually capture things, I'm very careful with the positions of the elements in my bokeh, the out of focus areas of the shot. Like here, there's the purple cosmos flower to the top left and the pale pink one in the bottom left. And I also positioned the white cosmos flowers on the right side, with a bit of space, between those and the edge of the shot. But the final element of interest that probably makes this a favorite is the addition of the butterfly over there on the right edge, hiding in the bokeh. And I have to admit that I'd not even seen this little guy when I shot the photograph. He's not there on any of the others that I shot, the frames that I shot either side of this one. It's as though he just really flitted in and out of the scene momentarily to make my photograph just that little bit better. Next, let's look at an image that I've not made that much fuss about, but which has remained a favorite, and that is image number 1943. This is another one of my flowerscapes, and this one with a very sort of country garden feel to it. It's remained a favorite really because of the simple complexity of the image. Now, I know what you're saying, and you're probably all sitting there now thinking, what the hell is he talking about? Simple complexity. What I mean by this is that, there's a lot to look at, but on the whole, it's very simple. There are various types of grasses intermingling, the two main white cosmos flowers are set in there. Then there's the blotches of white from the other cosmos flowers in the distance, and I positioned the camera so that the two foreground elements, the two flowers that we have in the foreground grasses there, have plenty of green behind them. They're only touching slightly on the white bokeh of the other cosmos flowers. And this also allowed me to position the line of foliage in focus against a predominantly dark green background, and this helps us to take both the foreground and the background elements for what they are without sort of overcomplicating things. What I also like about this shot is how it gets quite dark towards the bottom of the frame, and this is quite natural. I haven't played with this in Photoshop or anything. It's just how the scene was, how I found it, and how I composed it. But that dark area at the bottom really helps to give us a good solid base for the image. And as I recall shooting this, I also get these really nice memories of a warm late October afternoon, just sitting there on the ground with my legs sort of spread open and the tripod set up around my legs, and I was just playing with the compositions. I shot some horizontal, some vertical, looking through the viewfinder using the 70-200mm f/2.8 lens. And this was just like heaven for me on a lazy afternoon. I can't think of many more better ways to spend time, at least that I can talk about in a family podcast. On the last day of November, I shot image number 1997 with David Lee, an MBP community member, and I'd used his 14mm f/2.82 lens. Even while looking up at this, the image of this scene on the LCD with live view as I pushed the camera up between the trees on my tripod and released the shutter with my shutter release cable at full stretch, I knew that this was going to be a favourite of the year. The colours and the amazing perspective that the 14mm afforded has really sort of helped to make this shot something special for me, at least. With a pretty slow shutter speed, I shot this at 1/20th of a second. It's still remarkably sharp. I guess this shouldn't be surprising because we're still within the boundaries of the rules of thumb that says that we should use the focal length as the minimum shutter speed for non-image stabilized lenses. So, you know, I could have gone down as low as 14 with a 14 millimeter. Obviously, that isn't there as an option. But, you know, it all turned out good. As I settled on my top 10 images for 2008, I was a little surprised to see that six of the images were actually three pairs of images shot on the same day. The sea of red equinox flowers and the dragonfly in the cosmos flowers were shot on the same day. This shot that we're looking at, we just looked at now, was shot on the same day as the next one. And the last two images that we're going to look at after that were also shot on the same day. And I don't know if this is related to sort of getting into the zone, as they say. Obviously, being at a location, a certain location is going to help as well. But I'm wondering if I'm reaching a certain level of sort of creativity while in the field. You know, maybe sometimes more than others, that helps to get to really sort of create these images. And it maybe just helps to sort of to make the images flow more freely. And I'm going to keep my eye on this and sort of this little phenomenon that I'm noticing here, and just see if there's anything in this. So that next image, shot roughly an hour after the last one, is number 2000. I just love the colours reflected in the water here and the separation that we get from the simple foreground with those red pine needles that take up really, you know, a small portion of the screen. Compared to the relatively large out-of-focus area of the image, you know, it's just a very small part of the frame. The water does get slightly more focused as we get to the bottom of the frame, obviously being close to the camera, but the objects that are reflected in the water are far away, and you know, that sort of helps to retain that dreamy bokeh feel. The banks of the pool or the, you know, the pond add a nice sort of central element, and the tree trunks, you know, of the trees along the left side there, and their reflections along the left side help to sort of, you know, to frame the shot for us over there. This image actually started out as being a quick shot before I changed lenses to get more of the scene in. I posted images of the, you know, the, I think that this was shot with the 300 millimeter. And then I changed to the 70 to 200, and I did post some images from the 70 to 200, which are nice. But you know, this one just sort of it kept with me, and it turns out, you know, that this was really the shot from this little series that I ended up adding to this top 10, just because it, you know, that separation that we've got, and it just goes to show, and it's a good example of what I always say. You know, I maintain that you know, getting closer is always the best way, often, mostly the best way to make a shot more powerful. And this is no exception. So I said in the last episode that I was not going to select my top 10 images you know, during 2008, as there was a few days left and I had some photography days in my scopes. Well, I proved that it ain't over until the fat photographer sings with this last two images that we'll look at. You know, this is the last two of my selection, both shot on the last day of the year. Ironically, I'd returned to Inawashiro, which is where I'd shot the falls that we looked at first today on the 4th of January. And I was back at the lake that gives the area its name, and the first image that I want to look at is image number 2058. This is really quite a simple image, and as Landon pointed out a few days ago in a comment against this image, it's a far cry from the brightly coloured images that make up the rest of the selection. Like the distant dance image, though, I do love to immerse myself in a snow-covered, icy landscape, and that's what I'd done here as well. I actually recorded some audio shortly before and after the dawn shoot on. Yeah, you know, I did this was around lunchtime, but I was out in the pitch dark, and during the time that I waited for, you know, things to sort of brighten up a little bit, standing in a blizzard, basically. I recorded some audio on my iPhone. And so I'm hoping to bring that to you within the next couple of weeks. I'm still not for sure how to get the audio off the phone. And I've got a little bit of a sneaking suspicion that it might not be any good because of the sound of the wind. But I'm going to try and get that into a podcast for you over the next few weeks. I basically, though, spent the last few hours of the previous day and the first half of December the 31st on the beach of this lake, shooting out there in the driving snow. I was mainly photographing the swans and the pintail ducks that live there. But before I left, I wanted to get a shot of this lone tree that was just sort of sitting there on the beach in the snow waiting to be photographed. It's difficult to see the driving snow in the web version, but if you look close, you can see that the snow is driving across the scene almost horizontally. And for this shot, I'd basically just sat in the snow, happy to be wearing quilted trousers. And I'd sort of, again, I'd got my legs sort of open in a V shape with the tripod around my legs. But here, because of the wind, I'd opened the tripod legs up to the second notch. You know, normally if you leave the little metal things at the top of the tripod legs pushed in fully, you'll only open up to something like 30 degrees or so. But I raised those up and let it go to the second notch. And so basically I got a much wider angle on the tripod legs. And that was really just to help me to stabilize things in the driving wind. And, you know, so I was there sitting in the snow with the, you know, peering through the viewfinder. Again, did a few shots, some horizontal, some vertical, and was basically just playing around with the scene. And, you know, in a number of the shots, some pintails, the ducks flew across. I didn't actually upload any of those because although they had another element, it just didn't seem to work as well. I did upload one where there are three swans flying above the tree. And I'll probably, you know, we'll probably look at that when we do a podcast on this shoot. But, you know, this one, it's just a simple tree, snow, lake. And that's it. What I'd done here compositionally, obviously, you know, I've got the tree over to one side. I've not sort of bullseyed it into the center of the shot. The reason for this positioning, I did shoot some with it on the right as well. But the reason for this positioning is because, you know, the snow's coming at it from the right, and I wanted it to be on that side of the frame as though it had almost been pushed over there by the snow. Also, you know, I was conscious of where the breaking waves were. I took the camera off the 2 second timer, which I often use even with the cable release, just so that I could, you know, actually make sure that I knew the exact moment that I tripped the shutter, because I wanted just the right location of those waves as they broke, and really just, you know, paid a lot of attention to the shot. But again, this is really like simplified complexity. 12 minutes later, and I'd taken the camera off the tripod with the quick release, and I was hand holding, still using the 70-200mm f/2.8 lens. You know, basically, it wasn't possible to change lenses out here with the snow, so I was stuck with what I came out with. That it was working for me, though. You know, that was what I wanted to be using at the same time, at this time. But basically, you know, I'd shot a few images of swans flying through this dramatic landscape. They had they sort of appeared. I caught them out of the corner of my eye. They were flying around, so I decided to do a little bit of handheld shooting. And yeah, they're up on the website as well if you're interested. But like I say, we'll look at those in more detail in a week or two. But then I noticed, again, sort of from the corner of my eye, there was light coming from behind me that wasn't there a moment or so before. And as I turned around, I shot then image number 2061. And there was literally just a few moments where the clouds raised from the surface of the lake to show a bit of brightness and detail in the far shore of the lake. And that, you know, that's obviously what we can see there at the bottom of the image. And right at that time, six swans were flying over to their roosting ground, sort of over my shoulder, you know, looking back the other way. And I got one shot, and luckily I'd nailed the focus on the swans, and I was at F11 though. So, you know, there was lots of depth of field, and it was enough to get the distant shore in focus too. And so, you know, I knew that this was a winner as soon as I shot it. I didn't even have to look at the LCD. But you know, I mean, this is my own opinion. You know, you might not like it, but for me, it was like, wow, that's one of the best shots of the day. And it turns out that, you know, in looking at it, I ended up with another swan shot to finish my top 10 for the year off as well. Same as I did at the end of 2007. I only shot a handful of other photos after this on this day, and we decided to go back inside. My wife was there having a cup of hot chocolate in the country sort of restaurant thing that they have there on the edge of this beach. And you know, she'd been waiting patiently, having fed the pintail ducks four bags of bread. And I was determined not to push my luck too far during this trip. It was, you know, it's been a tough year for both of us, and we were here as much to have a break as we were to photograph, or I was to photograph. I'd left her in bed for the dawn shoot, so you know, I'd got a few extra points there, and you know, I was basically just feeling happy with my crop of images from the morning, and so we took a steady drive back to Tokyo not long after this. Finishing a great day, and in many ways, you know, although I was sort of saying last week that I didn't photograph as much as I'd like, I definitely feel that the quality is there, and looking back at you know, this 50 or so images that I picked out immediately, and then this final 10 and how difficult it was to nail down just 10, I'm definitely pleased that it was a good quality year. And so, you know, I'm happy with the results. And I think that this is one of the important things. I found this last year, and this is why I decided I would do this at the end of each year from now on. But it's definitely one of the important things with looking back at your last year. I've said this a lot of times. You're probably getting sick of hearing me say it, but I do believe that your last year should be your best work. And I feel that, you know, apart from with the exception of some locations that you find you never get back to, things like that, I would say that it's probably been my best quality work, you know, in any one. So it's just, I just feel that's how we should always be trying to progress. And, you know, doing this exercise of going back and looking through your last year, selecting your best shots, it gives you a chance to sort of reflect and, you know, a bit of a retrospective over the last sort of 12 months. And it can also show you your tendencies. We change, that what we aim for in our photography changes. And so, you know, it's just a great exercise. If you haven't done it, then I think it would be great, a good exercise for you too, to just sort of go back, take a look at your last 12 months' work and see if you feel that you're progressing. If you're not, maybe it's time to figure out something new to shoot, or some other things to try. If you're happy that way, that's fine. But if you're ambitious and you want to improve, and you find that, you know, looking at the shots you don't feel as though you are, it might be a good time to do a little bit of soul searching. And if you are happy with the images, then great. You know, it means that you're doing the right things, and you're getting better. And so, you know, that's the main thing. So that's it. That's my 2008 top 10. I hope you enjoyed looking at them with me. As I say, I'll be bringing you more details of the shoot from which I selected the last two images within the next few weeks, probably in 2 weeks, mainly because, you know, the next week we'll be looking at the winners of the portraits assignment that is currently in the voting stage. So, you know, remember that if you haven't voted yet, do go over to mbpgalleries.com to cast your vote, three votes actually. If you don't have an account there, it's a different login to the main site. So you'll need to create an account on the mvpgalleries.com website. But once you've done that, log in and look for the vote buttons above the images in the assignment gallery. You'll be able to vote until the end of Sunday, the 11th of January. So please take time to do so. It's an amazing gallery again. I ended up actually drawing too much attention to the few images that I had taken during the course of this assignment, with portrait in mind. But because I drew so much attention, I decided to not upload them. So shame on me. I didn't actually enter myself. Anyway, let's call it a day there for today. I'll be back next week with another Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, and we'll announce the winner of the assignment at that time. Of course, we'll also at that time set the stage for the next assignment, so I look forward to that. For now, though, you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.